Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 473, titled John Loftus on the Arab-Nazi Al-Qaeda Connection. This is being recorded on August 22nd of the year 2004. Remember, Spitfire, www.spitfirelist.com is the website. All of the CDs of the programs and lectures I've done over the years are available there. I don't get money from that arrangement. Their website, spitfirelist.com, will feature a detailed annotated article-length description of this program within a relatively short period of time after it has been broadcast. Sister Station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent shows streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows at a longer URL link to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. The program you're about to hear is a reading of a speech by John Loftus. I want to emphasize a point that you're going to hear John in a brief live interview segment make. That is, if there's an important typo, when you follow the instructions and use a search engine, you don't want to type in Vanna, V-A-N-N-A, but Bana. This was something the person who transcribed the speech misunderstood. It's Bana, B-A-N-N-A, not Vanna, V-A-N-N-A. So do a Google search or some other search engine to go Bana, B-A-N-N-A, close quote, quote, Bana, B-A-N-N-A, close quote, plus, quote, Nazi, unquote, and that'll give you the documents, not Vanna. Very important typo here that was simply due to an error in the transcription of the speech. It's Bana, not Vanna. So be aware of that, okay? Now, this program is going to consist largely of a reading of a print, a transcript of a speech that John Loftus recently made in Palm Springs, California, in observation of Holocaust Memorial Day at a Jewish temple in Southern California. Now, John Loftus is a name well familiar to listeners to this program. He's a former career military officer and Justice Department investigator who's holds just about every security clearance available. And it was John Loftus who headed up the Justice Department's Office of Special Investigations. Office of Special Investigations, charged with hunting down Nazi war criminals brought into the U.S. John Loftus resigned from that position when he found that an awful lot of these people had been brought in by the CIA. And furthermore, as he was working in the early 1980s, one of the linchpins of this importation program, the Crusade for Freedom, which brought entire SS intelligence units into the United States. The linchpins of this program were, first of all, Alan Dulles, who oversaw it, but then Richard Nixon, who basically administered the program for Alan Dulles, who devised the program. The chief spokesperson for the program was Ronald Reagan, and the person who handled the State Department machinations to get these people into the U.S. was William Casey. So basically, the elements that had imported these Nazis were in power in Washington, so John Loftus left. He's written a number of books, including The Belarus Secret that we've used on this program, and in combination with Mark Arons, first of all, on Holy Trinity, and the landmark text, The Secret War Against the Jews, which is one of the most important books ever written. Now, one of Loftus's gifts, he is a prosecuting attorney, and so he's able to express things in a clearer and more down-to-earth way than I am. And I'm going to read this speech that he gave earlier this year, and I think listeners are going to find this to be very satisfying, because you're going to see a high degree of correspondence between what Loftus is presenting here from his position as a government investigator with access to the most secret records of the last half century and what listeners have been hearing on my program. The difference is that Loftus expresses this more clearly and I think more expeditiously in a more down-to-earth fashion than I generally use. So in a sense, it's going to be material people have heard before, but in other words. Loftus is going to talk here about the Muslim Brotherhood, about its fascist origins, about how it was an extension of the Third Reich. It's going to talk about the Muslim Brotherhood having been recruited after the formal demise of the Third Reich by British intelligence, who basically put them all to work to try to crush the fledgling state of Israel. After that effort failed, British intelligence turned the Muslim Brotherhood over to the CIA, who used it in a variety of capacities. According to Loftus, eventually the CIA relocated many of the Brotherhood, who had been based primarily in Egypt, to Saudi Arabia when Nasser kicked them out of Egypt. And according to Loftus, it was the CIA that affected the Muslim Brotherhood's diaspora from Egypt to Saudi Arabia, and many members of the Brotherhood were installed in the madrasas, the reactionary religious teaching schools in Saudi Arabia, where they became a driving force. Then when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, basically the Muslim Brotherhood was renamed as the Maktab al-Khidmat il-Mujahideen, and the CIA basically put these Arab Nazis to work against the Soviet Union. And it was in that war that Osama bin Laden had his genesis as a warrior, and Abdullah al-Azam, his Muslim Brotherhood mentor, was a product of the relationships that I've just outlined. And as John Loftus points out here, basically Al-Qaeda is an outcropping of the Muslim Brotherhood. They basically are Arab Nazis. I mean, this is a little bit of an oversimplification, but it's basically accurate. And they are doing the work of the Third Reich. John Loftus does not connect the present efforts with the Underground Reich that I talk about, which is fine, because he'd be ridiculed if he did. It's not that I'm wrong about that, but there's only so much that the public can accept, and that's not meant to be patronizing. But this is a very, very important article. And after discussing the genesis of Al-Qaeda and its Muslim Brotherhood and Nazi roots, John Loftus details his efforts at frustrating the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda funding conduits in the United States, first by helping to launch the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002, and then acting as an advisor to the lawyers who are suing the Saudis and others and on behalf of survivors of the victims of 9/11. Before we get into the reading of this article, which is a transcription of the speech by John Loftus, it's my pleasure to present John in person with a very important addendum and correction to the text that you're about to hear. John, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thanks, Dave. Always good to be talking with you.
Now, in this speech that you gave earlier this year down in Palm Springs, there was an error in the transcription that's very important. Clarify that for us, if you would.
One of my volunteers transcribed it, and essentially, there's two words to put in your computer for a Google search, and that's going to kick out all the files the CIA has shredded. And the two words are BANA, B-A-N-N-A. B as in boy, not V as in Victor, the way that the transcriber had it. The words in the search are BANA, B-A-N-N-A, and Nazi, N-A-Z-I. So that's your homework for tonight, and I'll tell you why in the speech.
Okay, very good. Now, should they do that as two separate words, or was,
Two separate words.
Okay, with the standard plus in between.
Yep.
Okay,
or
so that's
just typing them next to each other will work either way.
All righty, excellent. So please note that, listeners, as you listen to the speech and the reading of same that you're about to hear. Well, John, what can I say other than keep up the great work? And there are a lot of us out here who are doing everything we can to supplement and augment your heroic efforts.
I appreciate it. People can always contact me at www.john-loftus.com.
All righty, John. Well, keep up the great work, and thanks for visiting with us.
Thank you, Dave.
Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience, and a big tip of the hat. This is from Jewish Community News. It's out of Palm Springs and the desert area of California. This is the August 2004 issue. And again, this is a transcript of a speech that John Loftus gave as the featured speaker at their Yom HaShoah Holocaust Remembrance Observance. This speech is titled here, "The Arab-Nazi Al-Qaeda Connection." And again, it's a transcript of a speech by the heroic John Loftus. It always seems a little strange to have an Irish Catholic talking about Yom HaShoah. I had an unusual education in the Holocaust. When I was working for the Attorney General, I was assigned to do the classified research about the Holocaust, so I went underground to a little town called Suitland, Maryland, right outside Washington, D.C., and that's where the U.S. government buries its secrets, literally. There are 20 underground vaults. Each vault is 1 acre in size. Anyone see the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark? The last scene of that movie is what the underground vaults are really like, only not as organized as they are in the movie. And in those underground vaults, I discovered something horrible. I learned that many of the Nazis that I had been assigned to prosecute were on the CIA payroll, but the CIA didn't know they were Nazis because the British Intelligence Service had lied to them. What the British Intelligence Service didn't know was that their liar was Kim Philby, the Soviet communist double agent, a little scandal of the Cold War. But our State Department swept it all under the rug and allowed the Nazis to stay in America until I was stupid enough to go public with it. What do you do when you want to go public with a story like this one? You call up 60 Minutes. We had a great time. Mike Wallace gave me 30 minutes on his show. For a long time, it was the longest segment that 60 Minutes ever did. When the episode about Nazis in America went on the air back in 1982, it caused a minor national uproar. Congress demanded hearings, Mike Wallace got the Emmy Award, and my family got the death threats. It was a great trip. Then a funny thing happened. Over the last 25 years, every retired spy in the U.S. and Canada and England all wanted me to be their lawyer, for free, of course. So I had 500 clients. They paid me a dollar apiece. So I am the worst paid lawyer in America, but among the better employed. Let me give you an example. This year, a friend of mine from the CIA named Bob Baer wrote a very good book about Saudi Arabia and terrorism. It's called Sleeping with the Devil. I read the book, and I got about a third of the way through, and I stopped. Bob was writing about how when he worked for the CIA, how bad the files were. He said, for example, the files for the Muslim Brotherhood were almost nothing. There were just a few newspaper clippings. I called Bob up and said, Bob, that's wrong. The CIA has enormous files on the Muslim Brotherhood, volumes of them. I know, because I read them a quarter of a century ago. He said, what do you mean? Here's how you can find all of the missing secrets about the Muslim Brotherhood, and you can do this too. I said, Bob, go to your computer and type in two words into the search part. Type the word Vanna, V-A-N-N-A. He said, yeah. Type in Nazi. Bob typed the two words in and out came 30 to 40 articles from around the world. He read them and called me back and said, oh my God, what have we done? Unquote. What I'm doing today is what I'm doing now. I'm educating a new generation in the CIA that the Muslim Brotherhood was a fascist organization that was hired by Western intelligence and evolved over time into what we know today as Al-Qaeda. Here's how the story began. In the 1920s, there was a young Egyptian named Al-Banna. And Al-Banna, that's first name Hassan Al-Banna, formed this nationalist group called the Muslim Brotherhood. Al-Banna was a devout admirer of Adolf Hitler and wrote to him frequently. So persistent was he in his admiration of the new Nazi party that in the 1930s, Al-Banna and the Muslim Brotherhood became a secret arm of Nazi intelligence. The Arab Nazis had much in common with the new Nazi doctrines. They hated Jews, they hated democracy, and they hated Western culture. It became the official policy of the Third Reich to secretly develop the Muslim Brotherhood as the Fifth Parliament, an army inside Egypt. When the war broke out, the Muslim Brotherhood promised in writing that they would rise up and help General Rommel and make sure that no English or American soldier was left alive in Cairo or Alexandria. The Muslim Brotherhood began to expand in scope and influence during World War II. They even had a Palestinian section headed by the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, one of the great bigots of all time. Here too was a man. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem was the Muslim Brotherhood representative for Palestine. These were undoubtedly Arab Nazis. The Grand Mufti, for example, went to Germany during the war and helped recruit an international SS division of Arab Nazis. They based it in Croatia and called it the Hanjar Muslim Division, but it was to become the core of Hitler's new army of Arab fascists that would conquer the Arab Peninsula from then on to Africa. Grand dreams. At the end of World War II, the Muslim Brotherhood was wanted for war crimes. Their German intelligence handlers were captured in Cairo. The whole net was rolled up by the British Secret Service. Then a horrible thing happened. Instead of prosecuting the Nazis, the Muslim Brotherhood, the British government, hired them. They brought all the fugitive Nazi war criminals of Arab and Muslim descent into Egypt, and for 3 years they were trained on a special mission. The British Secret Service wanted to use the fascists of the Muslim Brotherhood to strike down the infant state of Israel in 1948. Only a few people in the Mossad know this, but many of the members of the Arab armies and terrorist groups that tried to strangle the infant state of Israel were the Arab Nazis of the Muslim Brotherhood. Britain was not alone. The French intelligence service cooperated by releasing the Grand Mufti and smuggling him to Egypt, so all of the Arab Nazis came together. So from 1945 to 1948, the British Secret Service protected every Arab Nazi they could, but they failed to quash the State of Israel. What the British did then, they sold the Arab Nazis to the predecessor of what became the CIA. It may sound stupid, it may sound evil, but it did happen. The idea was that we were going to use the Arab Nazis in the Middle East as a counterweight to the Arab communists. Just as the Soviet Union was funding Arab communists, we would fund the Arab Nazis to fight against them. And lots of secret classes took place. We kept the Muslim Brotherhood on our payroll. But the Egyptians became nervous. Nasser ordered all of the Muslim Brotherhood out of Egypt, or he would imprison them or execute them all. During the 1950s, the CIA evacuated the Nazis of the Muslim Brotherhood to Saudi Arabia. Now, when they arrived in Saudi Arabia, some of the leading lights of the Muslim Brotherhood, like Abdullah al-Azam, became the teachers in the madrasas, the religious schools. And there they combined the doctrines of Nazism with this weird Islamic cult, Wahhabism. Everyone thinks that Islam is this fanatical religion, but it's not. They think that Islam, the Saudi version of Islam, is typical, but it's not. The Wahhabi cult was condemned as a heresy more than 60 times by the Muslim nations. But when the Saudis got wealthy, they bought a lot of silence. This is a very harsh cult. Wahhabism was only practiced by two nations, the Taliban and the Saudi Arabia. That's how extreme it is. It really has nothing to do with Islam. Islam is a very peaceful and tolerant religion. It has always had good relationships with the Jews for the first 1,000 years of its existence. For the Saudis, there was a ruler in charge of Saudi Arabia, and they were now the home of the Muslim Brotherhood, and fascism and extremism were mingled in these madrasa schools. And there was a young student who paid attention, and Abdullah al-Azam's student was named Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden was taught by the Nazis of the Muslim Brotherhood who had emigrated to Saudi Arabia. In 1979, the CIA decided to take the Arab Nazis out of cold storage. The Russians had invaded Afghanistan, so we told the Saudis that we would fund them if they would bring all of the Arab Nazis together and ship them off to Afghanistan to fight the Russians. We had to rename them. We couldn't call them the Muslim Brotherhood because that was too sensitive a name. Its Nazi caste was too known. So we called them the Maktab al-Kidamat il-Mujahideen, the MAK. And the CIA lied to Congress and said that they didn't know who was on the payroll in Afghanistan except for the Saudis. But it was not true. A small section of the CIA knew perfectly well that we had once again hired the Arab Nazis and that we were using them to fight our secret wars. We're going to come right back to this speech. I'm going to read a small item that we've used in For the Record Program 462. This is from the book House of Bush, House of Saud by Craig Unger, published in hardcover by Scribner's, copyright 2004. And we're going to review a section about who was running the MAK, the Maktab al-Kidamat. Unger writes here, specifically as vice president in the mid-80s, Bush supported aiding the Mujahideen in Afghanistan to the Maktab al-Kidamat, or MAK, or services offices, which sent money and fighters to the Afghan resistance in Peshawar. Quote, Bush was in charge of the covert operations that supported the MAK, says John Loftus, a Justice Department official in the 80s. Again, quoting, they were essentially hiring a terrorist to fight terrorism. Unquote. Co-founded by Osama bin Laden and Abdullah Azam, the MAK was the precursor to bin Laden's global terrorist network, Al-Qaeda. It sent money and fighters to the Afghan resistance in Peshawar, Pakistan, and set up recruitment centers in over 50 countries, including Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and even the United States, to bring thousands of warriors to Afghanistan to fight the Soviet Union. The MAK was later linked to the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center in New York through an office in Brooklyn known as the Al-Kifa Refugee Center. It's not clear how much contact he had with bin Laden, but Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, the blind sheikh who masterminded the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, also appeared in Peshawar on occasion. So the elder George Bush was running this operation in which the Arab Nazis, as Loftus puts it, were simply renamed the MAK. Continuing, Abdullah al-Azam and his assistant Osama bin Laden rose to some prominence from 1979 to 1989, and they won the war. They drove the Russians out of Afghanistan. Our CIA said, we won, let's go home, and we left this army of Arab fascists in the fields of Afghanistan. So the Saudis didn't want them to come back. The Saudis started paying bribes to Osama bin Laden and his followers to stay out of Saudi Arabia. Now, the MAK split in half. Azam was mysteriously assassinated, apparently by Osama bin Laden himself. The radical group, the most radical of the merge of Arab fascists and religious extremists, Osama called that Al-Qaeda. But to this day, there are branches of the Muslim Brotherhood all through Al-Qaeda. Osama bin Laden's second-in-command, Ayman al-Zawahiri, came from the Egyptian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, the results of a Palestinian Islamic Jihad. There are many flavors and branches, but they are all Muslim Brotherhoods. There's one in Israel. The organization you know as Hamas is actually a secret chapter of the Muslim Brotherhood. When Israel assassinated Sheikh Yassin a month ago, the Muslim Brotherhood published his obituary in a Cairo newspaper in Arabic, and revealed that he was actually the secret leader of the Muslim Brotherhood in Gaza. So the Muslim Brotherhood became this poison that spread throughout the Middle East, and on 9/11, it began to spread around the world. I know this sounds like some sort of a sick fantasy, but go to your computer and type in the words Vanna, V-A-N-N-A, and the word Nazi, N-A-Z-I, and you will see all of the articles come up. Those are all the pieces of information that the CIA was trying to hide from its employees. It didn't want them to know the awful past. So in 1984, when I was exposing European Nazis on the CIA payroll, at the same time they were trying to hide from Congress the fact that they had Arab Nazis back on the payroll to fight the Russians, a stupid and corrupt program. So when Bob Baer studied his files, he was just stunned. A whole generation, the current CIA people, know nothing about this. And believe me, the current generation CIA are good and decent Americans, and I like them a lot. They're trying to do a good job, but part of their problem is their files have been shredded. All of these secrets have to come out. So, of course, my clients in the intelligence community said, well, what are you doing? They gave me an example. They said, here's how the Saudis finance these groups. The Saudis have established a group of charities on a street in Virginia. It's 555 Grove Street, Herndon, Virginia. So I said, okay, the Saudis are terrorists, so what? These charities fund Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda. The Saudis are getting tax deductions for terrorism. They have set up front groups, so all the terrorist groups in the U.S. and the front groups get the Saudi money as a charitable donation. By the way, of course, as we've seen so many times, this is the group that was busted on March 20th of 2002 through Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute. It is heavily overlapped with the ethnic outreach branch of the Republican Party. Continuing, I said, you're kidding me. Nope. And they told me that right near where I lived in Tampa, Florida, was one of the leading terrorists in the world. There were these two professors at the University of South Florida. One had just left, and he was now in Syria, and he was the world head of Islamic Jihad. His number two, the head of Islamic Jihad in the Western Hemisphere, was Dr. Sami Al-Arian, who is still employed as a professor at the University of South Florida. You've got to be kidding. This can't be true. Yes, these guys are raising money all across America and shipping it to Syria to go down to Palestine, the Palestinian areas, and hire suicide bombers to kill Jews. They sent me the videotapes. There was Professor Al-Arian on stage, and one of his friends gets up and says, now who will give me $500 to kill a Jew? There are people standing by in Jerusalem who will go out on the street and stab a Jew with a knife, but we need $500. And he said, quote, all of this money will go to the Islamic Committee for Palestine, unquote. And that is the front group in the United States for the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. So I had all my friends in the FBI and CIA send in these files. I said, quote, why haven't you prosecuted this guy? You've known about him since 1989. We'd love to. We've tried to prosecute him, but we were told we couldn't touch him because he gets all of his money from the Saudis, and we are all under orders not to do anything to embarrass the Saudi government. I said, I don't mind embarrassing them. You know what I did? I donated money to the charity that was the terrorist fund because under Florida law, that gave me the right to sue the charity to find out where my money was going. It was hilarious. In early March of 2002, I drafted a long lawsuit exposing Professor Sami Al-Arian, naming all the crimes he'd committed, all the bombings in Israel, the fundraising in America with terrorism. I mentioned how this money got to him from the Saudis and how the Saudis had convinced our government not to prosecute him for political reasons. Because of my high-level security clearances, everything I write is sort of classified material and has to be sent back to the government before publication for censorship. So I sent my long lawsuit complaint to the CIA, and they loved it. They said, oh, great, we don't like the Saudis either. Go sue them, unquote. 3 days later, two FBI agents showed up at my door saying, you know, there are only 21 people in the U.S. government that knew some of this information, and now you're 22. How did you find out? I said, I'm sorry, I can't tell you attorney-client privilege. That's why my clients pay me a dollar each. The day before I went to file the lawsuit, I got a frantic phone call from the United States Department of Justice. They said, quote, John, please don't file the lawsuit tomorrow. We really are going to raid these Saudi charities. We're going to close them down. Just give us more time. Oh, yeah, you're going to raid them. That's what you told me in January and again in February, and now it's March. You want more time? I'll give you until 4 o'clock tomorrow. I'm filing my complaint at 10 a.m. so that at 4 p.m. I'm going to release the addresses of the Saudi charities. Back tomorrow. I filed my lawsuit at 10 o'clock and told the press I was going to hold something back for a little bit. At 10:15, the U.S. government launched Operation Green Quest, a massive raid on all the Saudi charities and homes and businesses, and in 1 hour we shut down the entire Saudi money laundering network in America. From March 20th, 2002 to the present, the government has found more evidence seized in those archives on that single raid that day. The evidence was so compelling that Professor Al-Aryan is no longer giving his speeches. He is now in federal prison awaiting trial. His accomplice, Hamoudeh, has also been indicted. Some 32 different people have been indicted in the United States as a direct result of these efforts. But not the Saudis. Not the Saudis. A month after I filed my lawsuit against Al-Aryan, I did it. I caused some trouble. I invited some 40 of the top trial lawyers in America to come down to St. Petersburg, Florida. Boy, did I have a deal for them. I wanted them to put up millions of dollars of their own money. I'm poor, I had no money to give them, but I wanted to do something for America. These are lawyers like Ron Motley that had won billions of dollars in their lawsuits against the tobacco industry and the asbestos industry. I said, quote, "What I want you to do is to look at the evidence I've collected. It's the same Saudi banks and charities that funded Sami Al-Aryan and that also funded Al-Qaeda," unquote. I said, "I want you to bring a class action in federal court in Washington on behalf of everyone who died on September 11th. I'm going to work for free and collect all the evidence, introduce you to the experts, provide all the exhibits and documents, and we have to do this for America," unquote. The lawyers studied all the documents I collected, and on August 15, 2002, they filed the largest class action lawsuit in American history in the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., asking for $1 trillion damages against the Saudis. The lawsuit said essentially that all these Saudi banks had one thing in common. They were bribing Osama bin Laden $300 million a year to stay out of Saudi Arabia and go blow up someone else. Well, on 9/11, we found out we were someone else, and the Saudis had to pay for their negligence. So that lawsuit is coming along very well. And more people in the CIA and FBI are sort of using me as a back channel to get our information. So believe it or not, they've actually given me my own TV show now on Sunday mornings on Fox TV nationwide. I'm on at 11:20 Eastern Standard Time, and ABC Radio has given me a national radio program, but I'm on at 10:30 at night, and it's past your bedtime. What I've become in my old age is a teacher. 25 years ago, I was a lot younger, a lot thinner, but now every day I get 500 to 1,000 emails from honest men and women around the world from the intelligence community. And we have to end the evil in this world. We have to recognize that Al-Qaeda simply didn't spring up on its own. The evil root was Nazism. The Al-Qaeda doctrine is the same as the Arab Nazis held. They hated Jews, they hate democracy, and they hate Westerners for Western culture. Al-Qaeda is nothing more than the religious expression of Arab fascism. We allowed this branch of the Nazi trunk to survive and to flourish, and it has come back to haunt us. That, again, a transcript of a speech by John Loftus from the Jewish Community News of August of 2004. Spitfire, WWW Spitfire list, docs all of the programs and lectures I've done over the years. Long written description of this program will be in the For the Record section within a week or two of the airing of the program. WFMU archiving the programs on Real Audio. www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery has streaming shows. Older shows are available for download only on a linked address. Be aware that the Spitfire website has a page to click on to support what I'm doing, and also has the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, available for download for free, as well as a search function. That concludes For the Record program number 473, the John Loftus on the Arab-Nazi Al-Qaeda connection, being recorded on August 22nd of 2004. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.